Now on Mitchell's Front Page, talking freely with Stephanie Asher.
Hey, good morning, Steph. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Mitchell. And yourself?
I'm very well indeed. Leap day today. Do you think it's just an extra day of work, or that it is something that we should celebrate and get out and about and do stuff with?
Oh, just an extra day at work. I never really give it a second thought, other than the poor people who were born on this day and so are a quarter younger than all of us.
But that's other right. Than that, I saw a grandfather that was celebrating his 21st birthday in the media on the weekend.
Lovely. That's very good.
Now, the front cover of the paper on Saturday, heat is on, it says. Councillors grilled for hours. What's happening there?
Yes, this is really interesting, isn't it? This report will be due after March 31st with the commissioners in at the City of Greater Geelong at the moment. And there's a lot of speculation about what will happen. I do talk to quite a few people involved and obviously read the paper as well. And, you know, one of the big calls is whether there will be administrators put in, whether the council will be sacked, essentially, as a result of this particular investigation. I think Keith Fagg did an article a couple of weeks ago and was saying that they should just put administrators in for the next year or two. Don't worry about having elections in October. And I thought, whoa, that's a fairly harsh call. And I don't necessarily think there should be no elections, but whether there will be an election in October is up for a little bit of debate, and certainly whether there'll be changes to the direct election model is also one of the question marks, I guess, about this investigation.
Yeah, I hope that there will in fact be elections. I think there'd be a lot of people out there in the community that would like to have their say about it.
Absolutely, and I think this is the time that people can actually make their vote count and make their statement about it, can't they? I mean, this current review is about the role and responsibilities and the governance. It's not really investigating the bullying that was happening with the Susan Halliday report at the end of last year. So this is about, you know, are there any sanctions for poor behaviour, and let's look at the code of conduct and is it actually used and all that sort of thing.
And some councillors would say, and I can imagine who they would be, that it's all going fine and we're still passing legislation at council meetings, or we're getting things resolved. So what do you think about that? Do you think that it's in such a dire situation that we do need to bring in the administrators?
I think, look, certainly this investigation will have greater insight than I would from where I sit. I probably, like you, hear different opinions, and my opinion is probably less relevant than, you know, somebody who's sitting in that role doing that investigation.
Yeah.
And they're certainly well qualified. I've actually just received an invitation to a breakfast where Francis O'Brien will be the guest speaker, so that'll be interesting in a couple of weeks' time. And they've certainly brought in the heavy hitters for the investigation, so I think they'll be doing their job. I gather the interviews, I won't call them interrogations. I think the newspaper called them interrogations.
Oh, I did it.
But I think the interviews are very intense, and they can go on for quite a few hours. So I think they've got, what, another month?
Well, it calls them marathon grillings. That's almost a synonym for interrogations, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Well, I mean, you know, you've got Francis O'Brien's a QC, and I think Terry Moran's done this sort of thing a few times before, and Jude Munro as well. So, yeah, I would imagine if there's nothing to find out, then all will be good. But I do think that there probably does need to be a bit of a shake-up. And come October, I think that's the voter opportunity to do that.
I think one of the big issues, and this is not just in the City of Greater Geelong, LGA, but across the entire state, is just about rates. People get upset when they see rates going up by 10% and ridiculous amounts, and they just feel like the council is consistently at their back pocket and they're not seeing any benefits as a result. Now, I actually said that I thought the rate capping proposal by Daniel Andrews is a good idea because it forces councils to live within their means. But now it looks like the City of Greater Geelong may just go around that anyway.
Yeah, and I wonder how that will fly. I don't know that that's going to be very popular, and I agree with you. I think in the 15 years that we've lived here, our rates have more than doubled, and they've always been much higher than the other side of the other peninsula, for example, Mornington Peninsula. I know family over there pay significantly lower rates than we do for, I would have thought, properties that have got higher values. So I think there are certain question marks, but of course, you know, local government doesn't have many levers.
No.
That I do think they need to review their services first. I mean, these are the things I've always campaigned on.
That's
it's like
it.
There's a bullying culture. They need more accountability, transparency, and they need to review their services.
Yeah, no, I think they're all really fair points. And again, reduce services, but stop hitting us at the hip pocket, I think, is perhaps the way that a lot of people would prefer to see things go. And it'll be interesting in the October elections if that ends up being an issue between potential candidates about where rates are most likely to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine it's going to be a very big issue. There's, you know, we're ripe for opportunity with issues, aren't we, really? I mean, even things like I drive through Eastern Gardens quite often and see all the lovely new fencing through there and think, really, that's an awful lot of money to spend on timber fencing through there. Surely there's areas that need more financial investment than that particular one there.
Yeah, that's probably a fair observation as well. Now, I'm going to be in the audience of Q&A tonight after bagging it for the last 2 weeks.
Did you get a special invitation?
Yeah, they did ask, and well, can you really turn down being part of national TV? Probably not. But I do notice that LGBTQIA issues are going to be up for discussion tonight. You're going to have a bit of a discussion on same-sex marriage, but also the Safe Schools program. And obviously, you're a parent, and perhaps going through this and educating the children. What do you think about the Safe Schools program?
Well, interestingly, I hadn't really come across it until I was at dinner a few weeks ago and somebody raised it and asked my opinion, or actually gave me their very vocal opinion. And they were vehemently opposed, and I think they were an avid reader of The Australian and no other newspaper. So it was very one-sided, and I had a bit of a look at it and asked around and listened to some radio programs, and I think I would take, as usual, a fairly middle road position. I think the main point is it needs to be age-appropriate. I think the thing that's actually offended people has been the, for example, role-playing on a same-sex date for a grade 5 class or something.
I thought that was a bit strange, and that's what I said earlier. Like, I'm not against the issue of trying to be more tolerant, but it did seem like for younger children that there was a bit of overreach there.
That's right. I think, you know, there's education and there's planting seeds, and I don't think you need to be doing that at that age. And I really don't have much insight into what they teach with sex ed and all the various sort of puberty classes that they run, because kids don't tend to tell you that much.
No.
And that, you know, I did ask one of my kids, you know, what do you know about pregnancy and making babies? And then, oh, we missed that one. We were overseas. We saw the drug class. That was it. So I think it's, you know, fairly standard. And I don't know that the material in the Safe Sex program is as probably as controversial as what we're hearing in the papers. There's probably a couple of radical examples being used. I think it's really, as you say, it's a really good idea to encourage tolerance and no bullying of anybody. I mean, whether it's a size issue, a colour issue, an ethnicity issue, or
whether it's in a council or a school.
That's right. I think we need to be a little bit realistic about it all.
But I mean, there was one example in addition to that same-sex dating, but also, you know, imagine you don't have gender for it. I mean, I just thought that was very strange for an 11-year-old child. And as I also said that last hour, I'm probably one of the few people here that can remember a lot of detail about being 11 years old, given that for me that's only, you know, about 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I just think that that would not have flown and would not have gone down very well at all in that sort of classroom environment.
No, and it's been quite a few more years for me than that, but I do remember being 10 and 11 as well, and really you're not thinking about those things then. It's all very, you know, it's just sort of about sport, and you're not really investigating.
No.
And even with, you know, as much media exposure as the kids get now and the internet and all that sort of thing, I think my understanding with most other parents is we're all teaching pretty similar things, which is there are things that you will come across and you will see, and just don't, you know, because it's a really hard image to shake, or it's a path that isn't going to make you feel good, and kids seem pretty sensible about it.
For the most part, yes, and I think that's just a voice of common sense in all of this. We're not against the Safe Schools program, but are there parts of it that could be reviewed based on the examples cited? Probably.
Yes, indeed, and age appropriate is the big thing for me. The examples that I heard, it's like, well, maybe year 11, year 12, sure, when those sorts of issues may actually be happening, but nobody's really supposed to be dating in grade 5 anyway. It's not a concept that they should be role-playing.
You'd hope not as a parent, I imagine.
What
about, again, more hot tips about an early election, but then Senate reform as well? In the Herald Sun, Ricky Muir says that this is the last chance for the voice of the ordinary voter to ever get into the Senate based on what we're seeing.
Well, you know, it is so controversial, isn't it? And I don't know with the early election. I still think, as I said last week, they should just make the decision, go hard, go early, just do it, because we all want to make a make a decision, and the speculation's always the uncertainty beast, and it sort of kills it. And as for minority parties, and it is obviously a flawed system what we have now, so I think the reform's probably appropriate. Independence, it's just as difficult, isn't it? And I think, the 1-6 option's a good one, though.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. But, I mean, independence perhaps should be focusing on maybe the House of Representatives now, and because there, like, for example, if you're running for the Senate, you're talking about statewide issues, whereas if you're talking about a grassroots making changes to your community, then presumably the House of Reps would be the place to go.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the other interesting thing has been the so-called preference whisperer and the people involved in that making almost threats about this legislation, which I thought was interesting. They've said that we're going to stack the marginal electorates in a certain way or put lots of independents there, and they'll all preference each other and perhaps get rid of, for example, Adam Bandt in Melbourne. Sarah Henderson in Corangamite was one example cited because of what you're doing in the Senate. I didn't think democracy was about threats.
No, I would have totally agreed, and that was a fairly similar approach that somebody took in a campaign of which there were 16 candidates, and I was one, and somebody did exactly that, made all the minor candidates swap their votes and create a block essentially to pull the favourites down. And I thought that was appalling behaviour. So, yes.
Is that your, I mean, presumably if you run as an independent, you give out how to vote cards. Is that what your you may not, but is that your tendency to preference the major parties at the bottom and put independents higher?
Look, when I have used how to vote cards, I've suggested people vote according to their own thoughts and investigations, and just put me number one. I haven't directed preferences with local government, yes. But again, as soon as there's more than really 9 or 10 candidates, you've got so much room for error, and I've scrutineered for somebody else, and it's really, really obvious which are the genuine votes and the genuine ones. I say genuine ones as against obviously very similar handwriting and somebody just sitting down and filling things out for other people.
For example, one person fills it out for the whole household,
for
example.
Right. Maybe a group of people fills it out for another group of people that'll bring them in at work.
I won't
be any more specific than that. But the genuine votes, there's so many errors. It's ridiculous. It really is. It's harder than you think to actually number 1 to 10 or 1 to 16 without repeating a number.
I mean, that's what I was trying to say to our expert last Tuesday, Sarah Madison, where we talked about the fact that, you know, with the current Senate in New South Wales, you would have had to number 1 to 110. And she said, well, you know, people, you know, it's once every 3 years or whatever, you should be putting in the effort. But the bottom line is people don't. And if you've got 15 candidates running for one House of Rep seat, it's quite easy to have two number 13s or
Absolutely.
Whatever.
Yep. And the scrutineers are really tough. You know, the slightest error, slightest doubt, they pull it out and check it. So
as they should. But, I mean, that's the political party system. Mm. You know, the Labour scrutineers are going to attack the Liberal votes and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's just going to keep pushing through that Senate situation, but I'd be very interested if they did, in fact, go to a snap election. But talking about independence and voting, you mentioned the front cover of the Age newspaper today about the Lord Mayor situation in Melbourne. This is actually the deputy position and the money going in there. Tell us about that.
That's right. Yeah, this is potentially the Deputy Mayor, the aspirational Deputy Mayor Ken Ong, has reportedly offered $200,000 to Robert Doyle for that position. And I heard Greg Barber from the Greens talking about it on another radio station as I was flipping on the way in. And one of the questions was, well, at least it's overt. You know, this sort of stuff goes on. There are deals. The whole model, and this was always my big reservation about having a mayor and deputy ticket in the Geelong system, is that it's basically very easy to buy that stack it millionaires only kind of thing, which is apparently what they're calling the Lord Mayor role in Melbourne. You have to be a millionaire to get it.
Yeah.
And the big money can, you know, influence the outcome, of course. And this is where, you know, again, this is why I run in these things, because I like to prove that you don't have to. You don't have to spend a lot of money. I think voters are smart enough to pick up who's being bought and who isn't, and I think that was proved in the last one. But, yes, so this is the question isn't really should people buy positions, because clearly they do. It's should they be open and transparent about it. So yeah, it's quite an interesting conversation.
And yeah, I think that's just the main thing. Openness and transparency rules the day, and let it all go and just see what happens. But it's probably got to be the best system out there.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, people will swear blind, or political tragics particularly will swear blind, that you have to have a lot of money and campaigns cost a lot of money. Well, I spent $2,000 on the last mayoral campaign and ended up with 45%
at the final count.
So it's like, really, you don't have to spend a lot of money.
No, that's right. And particularly when you factor in how much it costs to just do one mail out to everyone in the electorate, that costs a lot more than $2,000. So to get that result with $2,000 is a very good result for you.
Yes, because I don't believe people read those mail outs. In fact, it has a negative message sometimes. I know how I feel when I receive one. I think, oh, what a waste of money. You know, I don't even read it.
It's more that it just blends in with everything else that's going on, whereas perhaps a social media campaign or a video just starts to stand out a bit more.
Yeah, that's right. And real face-to-face conversations. You know, that's where Darren was amazing. Darren Lyons, he was out there working really hard, and I mean, he had a massive advantage in that he'd have a queue of 100 people waiting to sign, you know, and get his autograph.
Yeah.
And he's easy to see.
Yeah, that's it.
But he's very personable, and he worked really hard at the whole sort of out there on the hustings approach, which was very successful.
And last of all, on the issue of George Pell, I mean, that's just going on at the moment. I do have to correct the record, because I did say there was a bit of an altercation with Pell's security guards and the media. That was what was in the Sydney Morning Herald. However, now in the Herald Sun, they're saying no, it wasn't actually his security guards, it was the Italian police who were guarding the hotel, and presumably it's just media perhaps overreaching a bit, trying to get into somewhere where they shouldn't have got into, and that's what's caused the altercation. So it's nothing to do with George Pell.
That's interesting. I haven't really been keeping up. I've heard, you know, snippets on the news this morning of the actual interviews, but yes, interesting times for him.
That's right, and we'll continue to watch that, and obviously we'll be going to our expert in a moment. But thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it, and we'll speak to you same time next week.
Look forward to it.
Very good. Stephanie Asher there, talking freely, 22 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.